Are you a leader in customer success, pre-sales, professional services, support? Do you work behind the scenes and roll up your sleeves to make sure that customers are happy? Renew. Then this is for you. Welcome to the GSD Podcast.
Welcome to the GSD Podcast.
Getting it done. Services, success, and software. We'll talk with the pros that have been in the trenches, getting service teams off the ground, launching new types of groups to service customers, or running agencies that don't have a product attached to it. For the pros, by the pros.
This is the GSD Podcast, and this is your host, Jeff Kushmerick.
Hello there. Hey, this is Jeff from the GSD Podcast. A couple quick notes. Podcast was off for, I think, about 7 months or so. I had jumped in at a startup, helping set up the professional services and onboarding team. And then when all the COVID stuff started, decided to start my own thing. So I'm out there. Instead of helping one company, I'm helping out multiple companies, which is awesome. Really love working with a bunch of different people and different problems. So that's been great. As part of that, I definitely wanted to bring the podcast back. I'd been getting some emails, not just from services people, but from software people too. So I think we'll just call it the GSD Podcast. And sometimes the S can be services and sometimes it can be software. Today it's services. And one of the people who had been contacting me and definitely wanted to jump on and talk was a good buddy of mine, Scott Roth. He's the SVP of Global Customer Success at Medallia, which is an amazing company as well. You guys should definitely check them out. And Scott and I worked back at Endeca, which is now Oracle, I think like 2005, 2008. As I've mentioned before on some of the other podcasts, we had this new wave of just real go-getters come in as we started really going through a growth phase. And Scott had that big consulting background, but understood what it took to work with customers at a product company. And so he's been great. Funny thing about Scott is we always bump into each other in the most random of places. Like I think the last time I saw him was a mall, which I never go to. And before that, it was at I think an off Broadway performance of a Peppa Pig show or some type of kids show. So anyways, this was a blast. Scott's very, very smart about customer engagement, working with product teams, getting stuff launched, and whether that's a SaaS product or a custom product. So just a great guy to listen to, and a very, very calm, cool perspective on things as well too. So enjoy, and I will see you hopefully next week.
Recording. Hey, I'm going to stop recording and start recording again. I had it set to default, and I heard me. You know what? I'm just going to let it fly. Let's see if I can.
You're out of control today, Mr. Kushmerick.
So how are you?
Good, man. I'm probably smaller than when you last saw me physically.
Yeah? Did you? Is that on purpose, or did you go on Survivor, or what happened? Nope. You froze there for a second.
It's all about the Peloton, my friend.
Yeah, are you doing that? You get the Peloton?
We've had it for 2 years, so we're not a COVID band jumping family.
I'm glad you made that distinction, by the way. Like,
just want to make sure everyone knows, like out there in radio land, that this is something we did prior to COVID.
Do you get into the communities and trash talking and all that stuff?
I don't do the communities like that. I think there's the gamification on the actual rides is very helpful and motivating for me personally. And then just having friends you can follow so you can keep encouraging like people that are in your network. It's fun to see how they're doing and like, you know, congratulate them. It's like good motivation.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to ride today, but you know, so-and-so is going to ride and then they're going to give me crap for not riding. So I'm going to do it. I'll just go do it. They just do it. So I'm on a 75-week streak where I've worked out at least once a week for 75 straight weeks. I've never done that in my entire life.
Oh my God. Wow.
And I'm on an almost 3 month stint where I've ridden every other day without missing a day.
Jesus.
Which is like, that's out of control for me that I've done that.
You look
usually
great.
I'll usually go a couple of days and take a couple of days off and I'll go a couple of days, but
yeah,
I've been very diligent about every other day.
I've got the Airdyne, right? The thing with the big fan that, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
My dad has one. Those are nice.
Yeah.
Keep you cool and you get a workout. It's a double benefit.
It sucks. Don't get me wrong. I've been watching that, the Michael Jordan documentary while I'm on it.
It's so just good.
Absolutely amazing. I like to think of myself, Scott, as the Michael Jordan of professional services sometimes, right?
If I could be like Jeff. So, I don't know.
I don't know why you can't do this. Like, what's going on?
I think it was episode 2 or 3. They show footage of him at the Carrier Dome.
Yep. I'm trying to remember which one was that.
I think it's 2 or 3. Like,
when he was in college?
No. He was there. Like, they did an exhibition game. The Bulls played. I forget who the Bulls played. But I was at that game.
Oh, no kidding.
I was on the floor of the court. Because my high school photography teacher, Mr. Yep. Parker, how do you remember these names, was the photographer for Syracuse University Sports, and he taught high school photography.
Oh, okay.
And I begged Mr. Parker to be his lackey to carry all his equipment to that game. I'm like, Mr. Parker, you don't got to pay me. I will carry every camera, anything you want. You don't got to just tell me where to be, when, whatever. I just want to be on the – because he always had court pass. Like, he was on the floor, like, sitting on the basket with that big tele lens.
Yep.
And I'm like, just let me come to the game with you. He's like, yeah, no problem, Scott. And I was his lackey that day. And I got I got sweated on. Like, literally, sweat, drips of sweat of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen hit me. And I thought I was, like, the greatest thing ever.
Which, by the way, would be a total, like, you in your current state, like, that would freak you out beyond no belief, right?
So. Yeah, but back then in the 80s, it was like the greatest thing that ever happened. Like, you're never going to wash that spot of your body for the next 40 years.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you look great. Awesome. And I was going to ask if there was a skin product or a hydration sort of protocol that you're following these days or things like that. But it sounds like it's the Peloton. So,
Peloton or Diet Coke.
Oh, yeah. As you can imagine, I'm well caffeinated. I'm going to try and keep the rails on today.
All right.
So listen, and I'm going to dive. We're going to dive in. We're going to talk some professional services and success, Scott. But before that, I do have to tell you, the last guy that was a Buffalo native, the podcast never made it to the air. I'm just going to say that, right? So keep the Bills talk down.
So. Grew up in Syracuse, New York, went to school in Buffalo, and I'm a New York Giants fan.
Okay, I'll take that. I can respect the Giants fans. Okay. So,
all right. And honestly, like, I'm the kind of fan where, like, I just root for the team, but I don't know any of the players.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not into it that much. I just don't have the time.
So Mark Bavaro doesn't mean anything to you?
Like, literally, guess this.
So Scott, you know, I was talking about, I don't know if you listened to the one with Bill. Oh, look at this. My phone's ringing. Of course. Only, I don't think it's rang today. Hold on one second. It's my wife, so I'm now in trouble.
That's important.
Hold on one second. Scott, I'm going to put you on pause for one quick second. I'm just going to pause the recording. You can hear the whole thing.
Go.
This reminds me of a very funny story when I was at Bright Cove, and you have the emergency protocol, right? I'm sure, like, you know, with your wife, like, hey, it's an important day, but, like, call and hang up twice, and I'll know it's important, right? Like, so we were doing, like, board prep, you know, for the roadshow stuff or something like that. And, you know, I wasn't part of the roadshow, so I'm, like, getting everybody up to speed with our numbers and things like that, which you might have just gone through. And then suddenly the emergency protocol goes off. And I'm like, oh, my God, everybody hold on one second. And I'm on the phone, and I'm like, no, the fabric softener is next to the dryer, actually. So
yeah.
What I was saying before my phone rang was that you were that part of that next crop of professional services people that came to Endeca. You and Bill Bonneville, I believe, and Matt, like, you had some of us who were, you know, OJT and doing the best that we can and things like that. And then you came in, you know, everybody with their Accenture and Bearing Point backgrounds and things like that. So why don't you sort of talk about, no, I say that with respect, believe me, like you guys came in and we were like, hey, we've got enterprise level customers now. We can't be doing this Mickey Mouse stuff anymore. So that's a compliment. And so I'd love for you to just touch on sort of that background a little bit. And then what I'm looking for is, you know, we're trying to find that intersection of when services teams start getting big and how they need to change and how, you know, we kind of changed through that batch of years when you started until, you know, we got bought and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, when you look at startup organizations, obviously things are bootstrapped. Everything is run on a very tight ship and people are asked to play many roles.
Yep.
Sometimes those roles are roles they've never played before in their career. So they're asked to do the unknown. And because the type of people that start companies and are the first kind of wave of employees, they have a, I can do anything kind of attitude and I will do anything kind of attitude. And I think that's what makes startups so successful because people just roll up their sleeves and they figure out how to get it done at all costs.
Right.
And that's what you need, right? Because when you're brand new as an organization, you need to obtain customers. Need to make them wildly successful very quick.
100% referenceable, I believe was the term.
100% referenceable. And you need those customers to recognize that and speak publicly about that for you. And that's super important. So you do whatever you have to. Then you hit this point in your company's growth where the numbers matter all of a sudden, right? Like the first set of funding money has kind of run out and you're about to go for your next series of funding.
Yep.
And all of a sudden the next set of investors who are putting, you know, probably some large dollar value behind that, they start thinking about the numbers. What is your software number? What is your professional services number? If you're selling education, what's your education number?
Yeah.
And that's something companies that are in the growth phase don't really pay attention to because they're just like, we're going to grow at all costs no matter what.
Right.
But at some point you have to become a business.
Yep.
And a business has certain pillars, certain legs of the stool. And the analysts have models and they have to be able to plug numbers in models. And when you can't give them a number to plug, they can't value your company and you can't get funding. So that's kind of like where that level of like the next set of people kind of come in who have worked for larger organizations where they're already in the model and now they're kind of running a business, running a steady state business, and they have to operate at that.
Yep.
So remembering back to those days when I joined Endeca, it was really about helping the company think about like profitability at a customer level, thinking about what does it truly take to do this work so that when we're out bidding it and selling it, it's repeatable. You know, we're consistent. Yep. We're creating an ecosystem so our partners can also have a competitive nature, because that's another thing. As a growing enterprise software company, you need a partner ecosystem to be successful. No company is going to become a $1 billion organization without a partner ecosystem.
Right.
I don't care who you are in enterprise software.
And to add to that, because I was part of that initiative, it's not just for delivery, right? I mean, I remember specifically the exec team saying, finally, because they thought they were going to be able to do it for a while. And then they heard loud enough that like, you're not selling into Coke, right? Like maybe Accenture, maybe it's Sapien, maybe it's IBM, but those are the people that are selling into Coke. And then as part of that, they need to be able to learn how to sell your stuff. They need to be able to deliver your stuff. And they need to know why it's important for them, right? And for them, it's basically like, okay, I've got 60 software companies calling me up saying, please sell our stuff. Like, why do you guys matter, right?
Right. So those big firms that you mentioned, you know, what do they look at? They look at the total addressable market.
Yep.
They look at, can I build a practice of 500 practitioners that can deploy this technology? Because like that's like their money is made on their people.
Right.
Like they don't make software. So they don't get any of the software revenue. It's all about people revenue. So, you know, what is the addressable market? What kind of practice can I build around this? And how sustainable is it in the market? And your point about, you know, these big enterprise service providers, they have 15, 20, 30 relationships with these companies. They are ingrained at the C-suite and they're talking to them all the time. And as a startup software company, you can have the best sales directors in the world, but then getting a meeting with someone at that level is it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult.
Absolutely.
So you need an Accenture, a Deloitte, or an IBM to see the value in your technology. So when they're working on a roadmap with the CEO or the CIO or the CMO, yep. they can say, hey, I have a piece of technology. It solves these three key problems you've been trying to solve for 5 years. I want to bring in and show you how it works. And here's the expected return on that investment.
Right.
That's what gets you your meeting so that your people can come in, do what they do best, which is explain your product, explain how it works, co-sell yep. with your partner.
Yep.
And then the idea is that the partner takes on all the professional services revenue. And like, honestly, as a software company, that's exactly what you want. You want to enable partners to drive professional services revenue with your technology, and they right. drive software sales for you. And yep. then you can focus with your engineering team to build your product and make it even better.
I mean, it's like listening to a mirror right now, Scott. Thank you so much. but it's so true, right? It's are you a services company or a software company, right? Like, you know, go do that thing that you're successful at. Build the product and then let people go make money off of that. Have a small team, but maybe, you know, you're working small. I mean, I think we're like, you know, 70 people, 100 people or something like that. Yeah. But they're working on, you know, the bleeding edge stuff. So they're able to work with the, you know, dev team in the back if things need to be tweaked and stuff like that. But I think, like, if I think about the history of projects that I was on, and then, you know, by the time you guys came in, the stuff you guys were on, it went like from $30,000 quick starts, right, to like, oh my God, the sales team's killing me, but we're looking at like a 75K thing here. And then suddenly we're looking at, you know, $500,000 in services projects and things like that.
Yeah.
You became a practice manager. What were you, talk about some of the activities that you were doing then. Was it going out and scoping those things and managing the teams and stuff?
Sure. So as a practice manager, you now are basically running a portfolio, right? You are a company within a company is probably the best way to think about it.
Okay.
And your job as a portfolio manager is to not only, you have to go out and acquire customers, right? So you have to help the sales team sell. You have to sell your professional services so the customer understands the value you're going to bring to the table.
Yep.
You have to recruit talent. You have to train talent. You have to develop talent because you have to have a system that can be self-fulfilling.
Yep.
And then once you create that machine, your job is to feed the machine. And so, you know, first it was building out the infrastructure to make all that work. And then it was about helping acquire business in the field and making sure that my team was well fed in terms of the amount of pipeline coming in versus the number of people we had so that people were being utilized to the appropriate levels.
Yeah. 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 No, that's, it's all of that. Right. And I can't remember, there was a certain point, I think it was regional for a while and then it went vertical. Did you find any specific success in aligning teams, either vertical or regional? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think a lot of companies start off in a regional model.
Yep.
Because obviously when you go to a vertical model, that takes critical mass.
Yep.
It takes more staff to be in a verticalized solution than when you're in a regional solution. And so you have to hit a certain size and scale as a company to decide to go vertical. There's a very big benefit to being vertical because once you're in that vertical nature, you are speaking the exact same language that your customer speaks.
Right.
So when you're talking to a telecom and telecommunications company, they use certain terminology that you will hear nowhere else.
Yep.
When you talk to a financial services company, they have their own lingo.
Yep.
So being able to like just speak their language allows your team to have so much more credibility in the first and second meetings that you get brought right into the problem and you're solving it with the customer versus the customer saying, oh, I have to train another consultant about what we do. Like that's what they always say when you don't know their business.
Yeah.
So the vertical model gets you in very helps you out that way. Yep. The second thing the vertical model does is allows you to feed back to product what your industry needs. And I think that's something that a lot of companies kind of fall on deaf ears. So when you're a startup and a smaller company, the customer that pays you the most gets all the product enhancements. That's how it works.
Yep.
You can say it doesn't.
And nobody should feel bad about that. It's just the gig, right?
It's the way it works. Like you're a small company. You need their revenue to survive and you're going to fix things and build things that they want because they're willing to pay for it.
Yep.
But as you start moving into verticalization, you start realizing that certain verticals require certain things that others don't. And if you've done your market analysis and you think that your total addressable market is a certain dollar size in that vertical, you're going to prioritize one vertical's feature request over another because it's new business you can get for new customer acquisition. Yep. And honestly, when you're growing, you want to have, it's not only retaining your customers, it's net new logo acquisition. You want to have a wide base of customers. Yep. So it helps your product engineers and your product team, product managers prioritize what they're going to do because they're getting 1,000 requests every day from every customer of what they want. But how do they decide what's the most important? So it's another way to help kind of matrix out what you're going to do.
You know what? A couple points on that, if you don't mind me, just buttressing up that your point a little bit. I found that you're the salesperson's best friend in a vertical model because you're able to. First of all, you're a non-commissioned person in the room that is just there to answer questions, and you're using their language, and suddenly they realize the sales guy is just there to like block and tackle and your team is in there to basically A, talk about how they can use your software to what they need to do. And then B, you can also talk about what other people in the industry are doing. It's a copycat industry. And if you're like, oh yeah, well, you know, somebody just like your competitor is also doing X, Y, and Z or something like that, you know, no names and things like that. But like just saying that at an industry sort of level, it's out of the sales realm and it's just in total applicability. And I just found that just really, really resonates with customers in the pre-sales process.
That level of credibility is super important. And the other thing I think it does in the pre-sale process is let you actually help the customer kind of leapfrog competition.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Cause you're going to find that person on the other side of the table that's the aggressive go-getter that wants to be better than all the rest, not just do the status quo.
Yep.
And so you can, if you understand that that's what motivates that individual in a sales cycle, you can say, you know, like the status quo or table stakes is that everyone in this industry does X, Y, and Z. However, based upon your goals and objectives, I think you could do A, B, C, which would put you years ahead.
Yeah.
And for certain people that resonates and they want to be that and do that.
Oh,
and
so yeah.
No, I get there. And that's awesome. That's exciting.
I can tell you without mentioning names, but I'm not sure if you were there at the time, but there was one team that was working on one specific large home improvement store, and I was working on the other home improvement store. My goal was to have, oh yeah, they did that over there, but we're coming in 6 months after you, and there's been all these features released, and this is how they're going to make you better than that site.
Right. But I mean,
and hey, if somebody wants exclusivity, they have to pay more for it. So that's all there is.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you know, you bring in the architects, even a project manager, they're just so helpful because they're just in the weeds. They know they can just ask those super defined questions and help you pull out the scope and things like that. I don't know about you, but some people don't like bringing in their sort of, you know, the people who are actually on projects into the pre-sales phase. I find it super helpful. You have to coach the people a little bit and making sure that they're very well defined. But is that something that you continued as well too? I'm like, I'm going to bring in a PM and an architect on this because they know the questions to ask. Right. So
100%. I think there's a couple of things that to unpack there, honestly. One is you don't need to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah,
and I think that's what everybody. There's a complex out there that everyone wants to be the smartest.
Not a problem for me, by the way. So
I'm right in that camp, my friend. my philosophy on this is that my job is to bring the right people to the table because they all have a skill set that I don't have.
Yeah,
and my job is to identify the gaps and fill the gaps with the right people.
You're the quarterback.
Yeah, or the coach, one of the two.
Yeah.
Yep. Probably I'm not that athletic, so I won't go to quarterback. I'll go coach probably sit on the sidelines. But point being is, you know, when you're in a sales cycle, large enterprise companies have very defined processes. They have IT processes that when they evaluate software that you have to check certain boxes. There's obviously a slew of security requirements that are super important these days that probably weren't as important in the past.
Yep.
And so what your architect can do for you is can help educate your customer and navigate through their process to get those boxes checked and confirmed so that your customer can say with confidence, this is a technology we can bring into our enterprise or we can integrate with and it will not create any problems. And we feel really good about it because what that does is that speeds up your sales cycle. It doesn't slow it down. It speeds it up.
Yeah.
So that's your architect there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then your project manager, what they're going to help you do in your sales cycle is they're going to help your customer understand that there is a defined methodology that you as a company follow. And there is a path from start to finish, and it's expedited. And right. So the customer will see value quickly because there's a way to do it. It's not like you're not making it up for the first time. It's like right. We do this all the time. Like, my job is to do this day in and day out, and this is how I do it.
Yep.
What it also does is it exposes gaps. So this is like where the risk comes in the sales cycle, so to speak. And you said very well, coaching the person. Yeah. There's an art to selling. Like, let's be honest about it.
Yep.
But you want to identify like resources from the customer side you're going to need. Because at the end of the day, once you start dancing, like the dance is on and you need a partner. So you got to know who you need from the customer, what kind of skill sets you need, and what kind of availability you need. Giving the customer that visibility helps them plan.
Yeah.
But it also can create some risk because they might not have people to fill those boxes, and that's where they can get cold feet. So that is the art and the science right there. How deep do you go without going too deep that you scare them?
Yeah, exactly. And I do, you know, you want to be able to say like, yeah, you're going to need like, I don't know, 2 hours a week from your IT person, for example, right? Which is, and if you just wave it through and press the easy button, people will, if you're selling to the enterprise, they're going to be like, it's never that easy. I know it. This sounds like an issue versus just saying like, yeah, so we're going to do some requirements gathering up front, probably going to be like a 1 day session. We can stage it out and say like, okay, there's going to be an IT time from 2 to 3, and then we might need 1 or 2 hours a week. And then right before we go, you know, stuff like that, that's what they want to hear, as in my impression. So one thing here, cause I want to go into sort of what you're doing now, is that we were still, and this is non-SaaS basically, we were customizing a product that we would go install on some servers. Now we're in the SaaS world. So before we dive into that, you do a lot more than just the services now. And why don't you talk about where you are right now and the thing in your oversight and what you're watching over right now?
Yeah. So for the last almost 8 years now, I've been at a company called Medallia. We are a customer experience management company, and I am currently the senior vice president of global customer success for the company.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's well deserved too. So are you talking? You know, so I'm always interested when I'm talking to leaders like yourself. Are you watching over success? Is it the account management team? Are they just helping the customers out? Are they actually getting the renewals done? Everybody does it different. There's no right and wrong way to do it,
sure,
quote unquote. And then we can get sort of into implementation and onboarding and SaaS B2B, because that's kind of where I've been focusing a lot these days. So
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our customer success team was officially stood up in July of 2019. Prior to that, you know, everybody at Medallia was responsible, and I'll say is responsible for customer success. Like, everyone's got that in their DNA.
Yep.
But what happened was that it wasn't any one person's like sole focus job, right? It was always like part of their day job or part of their evening job.
Yep.
And you know, what that ended up doing was put a lot of strain on folks. You know, we have a professional services team. They have revenue targets we're asking them to hit, and that revenue targets equate to the amount of billable time they're able to log on a weekly basis. If they have to make a trade-off between something that's a billable activity versus an investment activity from a customer success perspective, you know, they were torn. Which one do I do?
Right.
And it wasn't fair to them.
No. It hits a breaking point, and then that's exactly what happens. Yep, exactly.
So when we got to the point of scale where we decided we as a company could afford to fund this organization, we started taking those responsibilities off of those people's shoulders so they could stay focused on their delivery activities, and we could have someone else focus on success.
Yeah.
So success means a lot of things, as you said, Jeff. You know, at the end of the day, it's really about us understanding our customers' goals and objectives so that we can help them achieve them. And achieve them is multiple things. It could be with additional products or services we offer. It could be through additional public recognition through our marketing channels to get them recognized for things they've done in their industry. It could be helping them influence our product roadmap to create new capabilities that they see or something they need to have a special differentiator for their industry.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we are a SaaS-based software company. We do need to have our customers for life. Like, that is my mantra, customer for life. So we, you know, renewals is part of the business. We need to make sure that a customer is renewing. But honestly, like, a renewal is the output of all of our hard work.
Right.
If we're doing everything right, working with our customers, helping them manage through their business challenges, helping them, you know, achieve their goals, then the renewal is something that should technically be table stakes, and it should it should just happen because the customer sees value in your software.
Yeah.
So I don't think of my CSMs as being a team that chases the renewal, because if they're chasing the renewal, then they've missed the mark altogether. They have to get much more upfront in the process with their customers and ingrained with them to make sure that the renewal is successful.
Yeah, it's that's fantastic. You know, I've been going through, and everybody I talk to that runs a success team, I have been asking sort of one question. Is it's just a fascinating answer. It's also based fascinating on where you are in your company's life cycle. And that's basically like, what is your profile for hiring people? And I'll just say specifically for a CSM role, right? Like, you know, because I don't know if you heard me talking to Renee. We all work together, and it was basically like, I'll take a mom that has two kids and she can only work 30 hours a week, and you know she's going to pack every minute into that 30 hours a week, and I don't care that she's got to leave at 4 o'clock and go pick up the kids and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, I just love hearing these sort of like, oh, I love hardworking people, and you know what but like, I'm just curious because it's an ever-changing world. There's some renewals, there's empathy, but you know, turn it over to you and see, like, yeah, because I know you're hiring people right now. Like, what knocks your socks off when people come in?
Yep. So I think there's like two or three things that I look for right off the bat. I look for people that can build a relationship. So in the first 30 seconds of my phone call with a candidate, I look at how they try to develop a relationship with me. Because if they can do it with me as an interviewer, then I know they're going to do it with their customer who's spending money with us.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, people buy from people.
Yep.
That is an age-old adage. Is that the term?
That is correct. There? No, don't
right?
keep
right?
going.
People buy from people. But what you need is you need someone that you can be honest with. Like, I need my customer to call my CSM up and say, hey, you know, we're having an issue. I need your help fixing this. What I don't need is a customer not telling us about an issue and letting that smolder and become a fire. Right?
Right.
You need to have honesty, trust, and compassion. So if you can build a relationship quickly, then I know you can do it with our customers, and they will come to you, and they will let you know when you need to fix something.
That's right.
So that's super important to me, is relationship building.
Yep.
Empathy is another really important skill that I don't think you can teach anyone. I think you either are born with it or you're not.
Right.
But people need to be empathetic. Like, we're all human beings. It's amazing to see how empathy has changed since COVID-19 has hit us.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, look at all of us now with like signs on our lawn, like thanking first responders. You know, did I have a sign on my lawn 2-3 months ago? No. Did I think about first responders? Like, I think about them today? No. Yep. Do I think about my FedEx delivery person and my UPS delivery person and my postal person? Like, I think about them today?
No, you're right.
No,
you're
right. It's a whole different mindset, right? Because things that you take as that were essential, but you just treated them as not essential, are so different today. And so empathy is a huge piece of it. You know, you need to know, like, is my customer, do they have a birth in their family? Is the child having a birthday? Did they lose a relative? Did someone get married? Did someone graduate? Like, just knowing those things in the relationship and like acknowledging them, it means a lot. And yeah. It's just a simple like text, like, hey, congratulations on your son's 7th birthday, or congratulations on your anniversary. Like, it's not, they're not hard to do.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a 2-page paragraph. Yeah,
no, exactly. it's just acknowledging it, you know? And I think that's super important. And if people aren't talking about that when I'm interviewing them and they're not bringing that up proactively, then that's a sign for me. It really makes me pause on like if I'm going to hire them or not.
That's great.
And then the last thing I think that's like really important for me is about how do you, as a person, present things to a customer, but not as a salesperson. So, you know, my CSMs are not salespeople. And that's not their job, but their job is to recommend our products and services to meet a customer's goals and objectives, right? Like if we have a piece of technology that's going to solve their problem, then we should tell the customer we have something that's going to solve your problem. And let me bring in my sales director and my solution consultant to actually show you how it works. But we should be teeing those up, and we should be finding those warm opportunities inside of our accounts.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing to do.
No, not at all.
Because you're bringing the right things to the customer, right? You're not forcing them something they don't need. This can become shelfware.
Right.
You're bringing them value.
Right.
And so I'm looking for people that can bring value to the customer, but not be seen as a salesperson. And that's a very unique skill, which I think it does, I'll say, disqualify a lot of people I talk to, because they said they've never had to do that before.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's as long as you're coming across as honest, like, I really feel that you would love this thing, right? Versus like, hey, did you check out the new module? Right? Like, right. It's totally like people can see through that, and
right.
They're hearing it all day long. Everybody has SaaS, you know, 15 SaaS products, you know, company I was at 100 people and 85 SaaS products, right? So like everything's SaaS product these days. And I remember I was going through and doing some post-implementation interviews with some customers. And that was exactly how things got phrased. Like, we've just launched 5 SaaS products. You were one of them. And here's some ways that I think you guys could improve in some areas and everything. I'm like, fire it away. Like, that's what I want to hear. And it's all about timely communications, you know, those types of things. It's the soft skills of everything. Not like, okay, I logged into Gainsight and I saw that I had to get back to this person today, right? So talk to me about, you know, customer signs up. Now what? What happens? I'm guessing they come into your department and you guys help them get up and live, or is that a different department?
Yeah. So we actually have a professional service organization that onboards our customers. Yep. There's a couple different models that our customers can follow depending upon what they want to do as an organization. Mm-hmm. You know, as a SaaS-based product, something that's very important is the self-service aspect of the technology.
Yeah.
You know, some companies want to control their own destiny 100% with their internal people. Other companies want to start off with the professional services organization from the vendor or from a partner,
right?
To get up and running quickly, and then they want to take the application back over time. And you know what we honestly see is a lot of companies want us to install it and then us to what we call a managed service. Right. You know, they're like kind of getting out of the business of tech. They're like, hey, we're not experts in tech, and that's not what we want to focus on. We want to focus on the outputs of the technology and the business process change. So we're going to outsource the entire stack to you from you know, engineering, from a SaaS perspective, all the way through the maintenance of the software. And we're just going to be the operators of it and the users of it. So, you know, we have different models depending upon what's right for the customer. We believe it's really important to meet the customer where they are in their journey.
Yep.
But, you know, let's just take a scenario where a customer wants us to do the installation, right? So, you know, a customer would come in, they would obviously like go through our sign up process, get signed up as a customer, and then they'd be introduced to their professional services team, which has a vertical nature to our way we organize.
Yep.
So that they understand the industry and they understand the pain points. We've developed a lot of quick start solutions. Mm-hmm. So we're able to get customers up and running, you know, in weeks, not months, depending upon their business needs, and get them started, and then just honestly keep expanding out the capabilities on a roadmap. It's really important, I think, to show speed to value, especially in SaaS capability.
Yeah.
And in this market,
can't launch 3 months before the renewals.
No, not a bit. You know, we'd love to launch everything within 4 weeks of the first meetings if we possibly can. And so that's where those project managers come in. You know, they manage everybody, our internal staff, they manage our customer staff to hit those goals and deadlines.
It's so important. It was one of the first things I did at the last place, which was just like taking these people who were at that time just note takers, project coordinators, and saying like, it was a very repeatable process. So as agile as I like to be, I'm like, it's a smart sheet with tasks, and go boom, 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 knock them down. And you drive that train, and as I always say, the PM project manager stands for pain in the ass, and just like, but do it in a good way. And people love you because they know you're only doing this so they can get live faster, right?
Yeah.
It's a
win for everybody, right? Because everyone feels good when you start at nothing and you complete a project and you're successfully implemented. You know, we had some great feedback from one of our customers today on LinkedIn where they just were so impressed of how much we got done, like during COVID. You know, their teams were furloughed and we still were able to get them up and running and beat their expectations on a timeline during COVID when their staff, like I said, was furloughed. But our team was still there. We're still plugging away for them. So that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So, you know, back in the old days, you know, if there was an issue, we could go have dev sort of fix something. How are you dealing with that now in the SaaS world where it's like, it's one thing affects everybody, you know, do you have a direct line into, into the product team and the engineering team for when there are issues or customers are needing something fast?
Yeah. I mean, I think any smart software company called Strike Deck, which is a customer success management platform. Mm-hmm. That is a tool that we use exclusively internally for all of our CSM capabilities. And it's I refer to it as my golden file cabinet for per customer. And my job right now, I think, is to ensure that my team members have what they need in that file cabinet or the ability to capture that information they need. Yeah. And get them technologies that exist in other places so they can utilize that to be more efficient. I think that's, everybody wants to get as much out of one individual as possible. That's just kind of the world of business.
Yeah.
So as a leader, you have to figure out like, what can you do to make them more efficient and get rid of laborious tasks? And so trying to understand all the different technologies that are out there. I mean, every day I get, 3 to 7 different solicitations. Oh, you should talk about this product or that product, and trying to make sense of them all. Mm-hmm. To figure out what's going to be best for my team to utilize if I should pay attention to any of them is really what I'm focused on the most right now.
Yeah. Is there a specific set of tools that you're sort of in love with right now that your team loves using? I'm just always curious about tools in the marketplace that people are using.
Yeah. Strike Deck is obviously what I focus them on 100%. I'm trying to understand different marketing communication technologies. I think it's really important for CSMs to personally invite customers to webinars and to regional user group meetings and local meetups by vertical. And I want to give them capability to do that at scale, but yet giving it a person. So it's very personalized to the recipient, but for the CSM, it's at scale. And there's definitely a lot of technologies that are out there that do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out, internally at Medallia, like, is the one we have the best one?
Right.
Is it scalable for my team to use? And if so, how do we enable them to do so?
That's great. That's great. What did I miss? What did I not ask that you expected me to ask?
I expect you to go in harder around renewals.
Yeah.
I think a lot of companies, think of the CSM, like their core job is renewing customers.
I don't feel that way.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, and that's probably why I didn't go that hard into it. I sort of got from the vibe when you were discussing the team that should not be the focus. It always comes down to one thing for me is who gets the commission on the renewal, right? And so that's all usually one of my questions because that tells me who really owns the relationship.
So I think we have a very unique approach here at Medallia that I'm really proud of. We made a strategic decision when I was asked to take on this team to double pay.
Yeah.
So we might be one of the few companies out there, and I'd love to know if you've seen other companies do this, but we pay both our sales director and we pay the CSM when a renewal does occur.
Yep.
Because the theory is that all the work the CSM has done for the multiple years prior to the renewal actually happening is one of the main drivers of why the renewal occurred.
Yep.
So like I said, all the work you do, the end result is the renewal. If you try to just do the renewal, then you're a transaction-based person. There's no relationship. And it becomes very impersonal.
Transactional,
and also it can also confrontational sometimes, right? Because it becomes one of those like nasty like procurement negotiations.
Yeah.
If you're seeing value and you can have your client business side person understand the value, they can help justify that internally the spend.
Yeah. I will say this, and I have seen that model before. And I have seen a very significant correlation between that model and the quality of new customers being brought in, right? So when we didn't have that model, the sales team would, and I don't mean to pick on salespeople, but they would just sign up everybody, right? But when they actually had to hold on to that customer and they had a book of business that they were responsible for the renewal aspect for, they would be more truthful and truthful. You know what I mean? Be more informative, I should say, in the sales phase versus, we've all been places where it's been like, oh my God, we just had these 5 customers dropped on us and they're crap. They don't really know what we do. And we know that they're going to churn within the first year because, you might be a like for example, a massive document collaboration tool, but people are just using you for storage, right? Like something like that. And then people are like, Jesus, I'm paying 40 grand a year if you just have docs stored. Oh, I don't just go. Yeah.
I'm really proud of our sales organization. Is like, we do not sell. I call that selling vapor. Mm-hmm. We don't sell vapor.
Yeah.
You know, our team is very good at making sure that we are solving business problems, concrete business problems that customers have. And, you know, if our customers ask us to do something like our technology doesn't do, we are very transparent about that.
Yeah.
Because there's just no point. Like, you can fib and you're going to get found out later and then you're going to have to deal with it, or you can be up front. And when you're up front, you build a lot more credibility. It's like, that's not what we do.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to solve that problem, we have to do an integration with XYZ.
Right.
That's all.
And yeah.
That's how we do it. That's how we handle it.
That's great. That's awesome. Any parting thoughts, Scott?
I know it's a crazy thing. It's Memorial Day weekend and we're still all under lockdown a little bit. So
I'm just laughing, not at the global pandemic, but just because Scott and I chatted last week, and you I don't want to say germaphobe, but you're pretty high level. You know, you're still washing your envelopes after 3 days, basically. So.
Yeah, you know, I know that your wife's in the medical profession, and you know you see the belly of the beast way more than I do. But yeah, I've lived in a little bubble.
That, by the way, does not work for me. Like the temperature check happens like every day in my house, and you cannot get out of your activities if you don't have a temperature. Like my wife's like, that's nice. You have the sniffles. Like I saw a guy with a spear through his heart yesterday, so I kind of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to keep my social distance this weekend.
They're lightening things up, Scott. You know what I'm doing tomorrow? I'm playing tennis with my wife. Yep.
Sounds like a wonderful actually day.
Opened up. Yeah, well, I'll be limping the rest of the day, but like they opened up at the tennis courts in my town. So it's, you know, we'll all be spaced out and we have to not touch each other's tennis balls. Excuse me, I'm afraid of saying that, but. Then we have to play other courts apart and everything, but we're getting places, Scott. So don't be afraid. And maybe 6 months from now, we can have a beer and I can fist bump you or something.
Well, that'd be wonderful. I'd look forward to that.
Okay. So just hold on for one quick second. I'm going to stop the recording and it was a pleasure. Scott, your company's website is medallia.com, or am I missing stuff?
Medallia.com.
Right.
Medallia.
Right. And I'm going to connect to Scott on the episode because he's hiring and he's looking for amazing CSMs. I heard, or other roles you're looking for. Is you listen to this 2 years from now. Don't just hit stop right now. Scott will always be looking for CSMs because the team's just going to keep growing. So there you go.
That's the plan.
Awesome. Let me hit stop and thank you so much, Scott.